Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. We believe small actions can have great impact. Take a small action today. Speak to a financial broker about a Zurich pension.
Tweet at Drive Time RTE.
The question, who was the COVID-19 patient zero, has flummoxed scientists for 2 years now. But Dr. Michael Worraby, an expert in virus evolution at the University of Arizona, has claimed that the first known COVID-19 patient was a seafood vendor at the Wuhan animal market. He has scoured public accounts of the first coronavirus cases, as well as interviews with early patients and journal articles. His findings have just been published in the journal Science, and I spoke to him a little while earlier, just before we came on air. I first asked him who was thought to be patient zero up to now.
Mr. Chen was in the big WHO report on the origins of the virus, quite heavily featured because he was the earliest, his onset of disease was earlier than anyone else, and also, again, was not linked to this market that had been thought of as a possible epicenter of the outbreak. But I found that December 8th date is incorrect.
Your first known case, the one that you put forward, was a female, a seafood vendor. You can tell me about her, please.
Her name is Wei Guixian. And she probably got sick sometime shortly before December 11th. And that does make her the very earliest case that we know about. And she worked in an area of the market, interestingly, that was close to where people were selling some of these live animals like raccoon dogs that had been implicated in the first SARS outbreak. So it's very interesting case of connecting the dots.
Can you explain to us how it began then? Because people are dealing with this pandemic from patient zero, whoever that may be, but from the earliest cases that you know of, how did this all begin?
All of the evidence is pointing toward an origin of the outbreak at this specific market, Huanan Market in Wuhan. And it's just a repeat, it seems to be a repeat of SARS-1, where we know these animals can get viruses. Ultimately, this virus was a bat virus. So years ago, there was a bat that had the progenitor of this, and it probably then jumped into one of these animals, perhaps through farming of the animals close to cave complexes in western Hubei province, which is where Wuhan is. An infected animal then makes its way to the market and is sitting there in a cage surrounded by hundreds of people, and it causes the same respiratory symptoms it does in a human, and that virus moves out through droplets or aerosols into that first person's nose, and that's it. Off it goes in humans.
So even from animal to human, it moves from droplets or aerosol. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. That's most likely the case.
Okay. And how is it that this virus in particular is so transmissible and so deadly?
What we're looking at here is the one in a million virus that has what it takes to be a good human pathogen. So these viruses are crossing over into humans all the time, in people, in villages near bat caves where these viruses are known to exist in bats. You can go in and test, and something like 3% of the people will have antibodies, not to SARS-CoV-2, but to these bat viruses. Mm-hmm. So they're jumping constantly. It's just that it's very rare for the virus that jumps to have the ability to spread so easily. And this one, again, just had those features. And that's why it became a pandemic and we noticed it.
Mm-hmm. I'll come back to that in just a second, this one in a million virus, as you describe it, because what you're saying is fascinating. But equally fascinating to me, Dr. Worraby, is the amount of information and background that you've gleaned so far through your research. And I just wonder, with all of the firepower that the WHO investigation had, how do you think they got it so wrong?
I think to a large degree, what happened with that investigation, and in fact, they like to call it a study, not an investigation, is that information was really handed to the WHO team by the Chinese delegation. And so the team interviewed Mr. Chen, for example, and they were simply told, here's Mr. Chen, his disease onset was December 8th, and I think no one thought to really interrogate him on the information that had been given to them by the Chinese delegation. And they're also dealing with a tremendous amount of information, and that one detail they got wrong, and it turns out to be a pretty consequential mistake.
And have you discounted at this stage that this originated in a Chinese lab through subversive tactics or even unwittingly that it leaked from the lab?
I have taken that theory very seriously, and in fact initiated a letter, an earlier letter to Science Magazine saying, you know, we need to take the lab leak idea seriously, which is what actually prompted President Biden's 90-day intelligence review here to try to see what information there was about that theory. But as time has gone on, the evidence just keeps mounting up and up in favor of a natural origin, with nothing at all pointing to the Wuhan Institute of Virology. And so it's kind of like putting things under a microscope at 2x magnification. Wuhan looks interesting because it has this lab that studies these viruses. But when you go up to 10x magnification, you see that there are no early cases linked to the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and they all either worked or shopped at one, or not all, but most worked or shopped at Huanan Market or lived in the neighborhoods directly around it.
Angela Merkel of Germany has said in the last 24 hours or so that Germany possibly trusted China too much. I don't know if she's referring to the origination of this virus, or she could well be as well be including efforts to contain the virus in the very early days. Do you think that more could have been done to stop the virus from spreading so quickly, or is it this so transmissible that that was never going to be a possibility?
Well, in my paper, I actually touch on this, and it's quite a tragic story. So China, after the original SARS outbreak, set up a system to search for what they call pneumonia of unknown etiology, which is just a fancy way of saying pneumonia, where we don't know what's causing it. And it's supposed to involve doctors, when they come across a pneumonia patient where the person doesn't respond to antibiotics and doesn't test positive for any known viruses like influenza, that case is supposed to be reported to a national center within hours. It just completely fell apart here, that no one was using it in Wuhan in the early weeks of the outbreak, and that delayed the recognition of the virus. And I really do believe if that system had been working correctly, that it would have been possible to actually nip it in the bud and not have it move outside of Wuhan.
Tragic is the right word, isn't it? Because 2 years later, roughly, we're dealing with so many deaths worldwide, and the world has stopped periodically for lockdowns and public health measures to try and contain this virus. And the question, Michael, on so many people's lips is, as we enter more restrictions in Ireland, in this country, like so many other countries, is when will this all end? I mean, is there an end point to this virus?
It's not going to end in the sense of going away. We're always going to have this, almost certainly, just like we have influenza now, and we'll probably require updates to vaccines periodically. But we are still moving through a period where the virus is finding people who have never been infected yet. And once the virus has found all of those people, and rest assured, it will find you if it hasn't yet, what's going to happen is everyone is going to have some immunity, either from natural infection or from vaccines. And that's going to dramatically reduce the impact of the virus. And we'll settle into a situation where it's going to kill hundreds of thousands of people around the world every year, but hopefully it will be something like influenza. You know, it does kill a lot of people, but it, it's something that we kind of take in stride as part of living in the world, and we will move beyond a situation where it is sort of at the forefront of everything and completely reshaping our lives.
To reach that point globally, what is the best use of vaccine then, Abby? Is it to boost people who are fully vaccinated or have got two jabs already, or is it to extend an original vaccine, if you will, to poorer countries worldwide?
Yeah, ideally, the best use of the vaccine would be to get it to people who haven't had it at all yet. In the fullness of time is likely to be the case, is that we will understand that this shot or this vaccine should have been a three-shot regimen from the get-go, and there are other vaccines that require that.
Can I ask you finally then, Dr. Warraby, about what you called this one-in-a-million virus? But it all happened, it seems, so easily from animal to human and spread so quickly worldwide. How likely is it that something like this could happen again?
It will happen again. There's no question about it. We still have a long way to go in terms of reducing opportunities for these events to happen by clamping down on the kind of trade in wild animals that seems to have initiated this outbreak in China. China has made promises to do that, and what we now know is that the clampdown was just not being enforced, that people were selling these animals out in the open, even talking with investigators about how they were illegal. And so clearly there was really no impediment to that.
Very interesting indeed. That was Dr. Michael Warraby, expert in virus evolution at the University of Arizona, who has now identified the first known COVID-19 patient as a seafood vendor at the Wuhan Animal Market.